Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly from Skipper's Review, and today I'm talking to Captain Pete Pallada for Boat Radio. So Captain Pete, a scuba diver and instructor who has worked Florida's waters for more than three decades and now owns a dive shop called Deep Relief here in Pompano Beach, South Florida. Captain Pete has had many experiences, but I began by asking him, what's the most nerve-wracking experience he's had underwater?
I could tell you a story that occurred when I was in Tahiti back in 2007, I believe it was. We were taken to a lagoon in Tahiti, and we were doing some scuba diving, and we were told to gear up and go in the water. And when we looked in the water, there were sharks everywhere. And we asked the dive master where he was going to take us to go diving, and he said, right here.
So just off the dock?
No, it was on a boat.
Oh, it was on a boat.
It was on a boat. It was in a little lagoon, but there were sharks everywhere. Mm. I mean, just sharks everywhere. And he said, don't worry about it. When you jump in the water,
they'll go away.
Definitely the famous last words. He said, don't worry about it because once you jump in the water, they'll go away. And it was just like in one of those movies where you see all these sharks just swimming around. We jumped in the water, and sure as shooting, they dispersed. However, about 10 minutes later,
they came back.
They all came back, and they were swimming all around us, And we just took pictures, and that one picture that I have in here that I showed you that we put on the site is of me. Here they are.
So how many of you were obeying this instructor to jump into the sharks?
We all did. We figured he knew what he
was. It was like 10 people or so?
There were about 10 people on the boat. And here they are. Here we are. This is us swimming around all these sharks.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Bull sharks, black tips, looks like lemon sharks. Pretty awesome.
And do you think that maybe they feed them when there's nobody around so they come to that area? Or they seem like they're pretty, it's full stomachs, so they didn't try and eat you guys.
No, they didn't. They didn't. I don't think so. Tahiti is known for their sharks. They have thousands and thousands of sharks at any one time.
Yeah.
And they weren't involved with us. They didn't, they didn't want
us. So maybe they have plenty of food and they don't need to eat people.
I hope so. I trust that's what it was. And we did some night diving, too, in Tahiti. And there were sharks all around us.
So if you do a shark dive here in Florida, do you use a cage or do you just jump right in with them, too?
We used to. Florida used to allow shark diving here. And the powers to be said, no, they don't want any people to feed the sharks and do shark diving around here because of the public. And they were afraid that the public was going to be lunch for a shark.
Yeah.
So the state forbid it.
Oh, I didn't know that. So when did that happen?
Within the last 5 to 8 years, I'm thinking.
Oh.
But we used to do it off the boats right here in shallow water.
Yeah, I did not know that that was stopped.
Was stopped.
But it was still going on.
Can't do it. Can't do it. Can't do it anywhere in Florida that I know of. You can do it outside the legal limit. I think it's 5 miles. But if you go 5 miles off the shore, off Pompano, it goes down hundreds of feet. So you can't do it.
So how many days a week do you go diving?
Now?
Yeah.
None.
Oh, you don't go diving at all anymore?
Not much anymore. Before we used to go, I used to go out. To get 10,000 dives, you have to go a lot of times.
Yeah, that's why I figured so, maybe you go twice a week or something.
No, I'd go 5 or 6 times a week, maybe 3 or 4 times a day. So it was a lot of diving.
So when did that stop? When did you cut that?
I slowed down when I got a business, when I got into the business of diving. And you just didn't have time. You have to run a business. You can't go diving.
And do you miss it?
Yes, I do. And I still do a lot of it. And I travel as much as I can. I go all over the Caribbean. I've been all over the Caribbean. And now I like the Pacific a lot better. The water's cleaner.
Okay.
And it's different than here. South Florida is getting pretty well mucked up with environmental pollution.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you get a lot of people from up north? Because you set up dives, right?
Set up dives. We charter dives that go out. We get a lot of people from Canada. A lot of Germans, believe it or not, come here and do beach diving in Pompano, Florida. It should be the beach diving capital of the United States, Pompano Beach. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
So beach diving mean you just walk straight off the beach walk out there.
Exactly.
The reef is, what, 10 feet out?
Oh, no, it goes anywhere from 15 to maybe 100 yards or 100 feet out.
And then how deep is it?
15 feet of water.
Oh, it's a perfect
beautiful
little dive.
It's perfect. It's perfect. To get off a boat 3/4 of a mile out, you're down about 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And you go out a little bit more and you get down deeper and deeper.
So do you think you're going to stick at this for a while, or are you going to get out of it and just go off and dive the world, or what are you going to do with yourself?
Wow, that's a good question. I've done as much as I want to do right here in Florida.
Yeah.
So I'll stay diving.
Sure.
I will dive a lot.
It's in your blood.
It is. I've been diving since I was 13 years old, so that's a long time
ago. Yeah, that's not something you just stop.
No. It's something you fell in love with, and I fell in love with, so. And
you had mentioned earlier something about doing the career of something that you love. Tell me about how you feel about that now.
I would suggest that if somebody really loved doing diving, mm-hmm. that they stay away from going into business of diving. Because ultimately, you do it over and over again, and you get tired of what you're doing.
You get burnt out.
You get burned out is exactly what it is. And if you're not making oodles of money, and there's not oodles of money in the dive industry, dive business, it gets old. But I love teaching people, and teaching people and diving has gotten me everything that I've wanted.
And you do some photography, or you're interested in the whole photography end of it?
I've done photography. I've done cave diving. I've done wreck diving, night diving, deep diving. I've done pretty much all. So I've experienced it all. But diving is changing. The business of diving is changing. I still love what I do. However, I don't want to do it anymore. I just don't want to do it because I've done it. I'm ready for other experiences. I actually told people, I went to a networking group.
Yeah.
I go there every week, and they said, well, you haven't been here in the last couple of weeks. And I said, no, I went and I did some acting. And I said, you know, they said, how'd you feel about that? And I said, well, I think everybody should get out of their comfort zone from time to time. Mm-hmm. And this was definitely way out of my comfort zone, where I'm in front of a camera instead of behind a camera.
Right.
And I said, it was exhilarating. It was just fantastic. I loved the heck out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, teaching people how to dive and watching their expressions, fantastic still.
I'm sure.
But the day-to-day drudgery of doing it gets to you after a while.
Like, and I'm sure, like being an actor 24/7, but it's almost like that when you're a professional actor.
You know, I sometimes...
It's tough sometimes.
You're absolutely correct. I sometimes wonder, and I look at people that I really admire. I respect De Niro. I think he's a great actor.
Amazing, yeah.
And he's still acting. And you wonder, how is he still doing it after 40, 50 years? How does he have that passion to do it? I don't know.
I think it's probably like you're diving or like anything. If you have it, it gets in your blood and you just, it becomes a part of life.
It must be. And he doesn't, a fellow like him doesn't have to do it anymore.
No,
he just does it out of...
not. He does it out of passion and love. Yeah.
So if I didn't have to come here and pay the bills and...
Mm-hmm.
Every day. The passion's still there. So, yes, I still love it.
Yeah. It just becomes a little bit of a drudgery having to do it when maybe you just don't feel like doing it day.
Yeah, you don't feel like getting up every day.
Right.
So getting out of your comfort zone, and I teach. I mentor little kids now.
What do you teach them?
I don't actually teach them. I just mentor them.
What does that mean?
I joined a group about 3 years ago, and they wanted retired professionals.
Yeah.
Just to go into these schools, the elementary schools and middle schools, just to talk to the kids and give them some sense of responsibility to try and get their lives to change a little bit. And that's what I've been doing in diving. You're actually changing someone's perspective on life when you're teaching diving, because they're coming from terra firma, which is land, and they're going underwater, which is not natural for a human being. So I've been able to walk people through that, and they saw that, and they said, well, why don't you come in, just talk to kids who don't have a good family life, perhaps, and they have... maybe their parents have left them, or they're being neglected. They said, let's just see if it changes their attitude to school, and their grades go up and their attendance grows up. So.
And you talk to them about diving? Or about life?
Just about life in general, and I see how they're doing, and I just, I'm a role model, I guess. They wanted a role model for somebody who's been successful.
And they were able to see you could make people comfortable enough to go from land to water, so maybe you could work with these kids and work with them in a pretty... relaxed manner.
Yeah, and so far we don't have the results back, but this is the first year in elementary schools in Florida, and it's going to be a national movement to do this, mentoring kids.
So that would be around the ages, what, 8 to 10?
Or less.
Cool.
Some younger, from pre-K kindergarten all the way up to, for me anyway, to fifth grade.
And you do individual kids or you talk
individual,
to a classroom?
Individual.
Oh, individual kids, okay.
Yeah.
How do you meet them?
I was assigned to one of the local schools, one of the disadvantaged schools.
Yeah.
You okay?
Yep.
One of the disadvantaged schools. And we have a list of people who need mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
Either they're truant or don't show up at all for class or school or have some grade problems.
Mm.
And they just want us to talk to them. That's all our job is. We go and take them out of the classroom and go to the reading rooms or the media rooms.
We stay on the school property.
We stay on the school property. Oh, yeah, with everything that's going on. And,
yeah.
You know, they don't want anybody to be alone with these people.
Mm.
Which is a good...
Yeah.
Because you never know who's out there.
No, you never know.
But we work very closely. We're a team with the social worker in the school. And if there are any problems, we just refer them to the social worker. We're just there as mentors.
I'm sure you mentioned when you're with them that you're into diving.
Have they,
any of them said, I want to do that?
Yes, they do. But I don't think the kids know what... Exactly what we're talking about. One of the problems in our dive industry that we see as a group is we don't have any more heroes out there.
Mm.
When I got into the business, and you didn't ask me, but I'll tell you, how did I get into diving?
Oh, of course I was going to ask.
I'll just preempt you there. Jacques Cousteau, which is fairly...
I was a big fan of his, too.
Very famous. And there was a TV personality called Mike Nelson, Lloyd Bridges. He was on a dive show back in the 50s and 60s. Dates me a little bit. Yeah, okay. And a lot of my peers fell in love with the sport through these people.
Mm.
Jacques Cousteau, and then I went to college for marine biology, so that's how I got involved.
So you saw Jacques Cousteau on television, or you found a book about him, or
all of the above? Plus, I finally met somebody that was an idol of mine. I met him at one of the trade shows.
You met Jacques?
I met Jacques Cousteau and both of his sons that are in the business or in the industry.
Interesting. I did a school project on him too.
Did you really?
I did.
Very interesting elderly man. Very stately. May I give you a quick story about meeting him? At one of the trade shows, during a break, I went into the restroom, and I walked out of the... As I was walking out of the restroom, I see all these people in front of me, and they're all looking. And I thought they were looking at me, so I looked down to see if I had left something open.
Right.
And I didn't, and I walked out some more, and they looked right past me. Well, Jacques Cousteau...
Over your shoulder.
was coming out of the restroom at the same time I was. That's my claim to fame, and then I met him later on. And I met his son, Philippe.
How did the meeting go? Because a lot of the times that can be a little bit not as great as you think it's going to be.
No, very well. It was just a meet and greet.
Okay.
Hello, I watched your movies, I read your books, and that's all it was. Mm. It's not a personal
thing. But isn't it interesting, though, how one person can have such a huge
influence
on your life?
Absolutely. Look at any facet of life that you maybe have passion in, whether it be nursing or...
There is. There's always that one person
that clicks
something in you.
Teachers.
Yeah.
Actors. Mine was Jacques Cousteau and diving.
Yeah.
Plus, I loved it, and I've always loved it.
Did you grow up in Florida?
No.
Where are you from?
New York. Long Island, New York.
Long Island. Were you in love with the ocean before the whole Jacques thing? I'm sure you were.
I don't know how it happened. I guess I watched, it was called Sea Hunt at the time, and I fell in love with it and just loved it. And started diving at 12 or 13 and just kept on going.
And were your parents into it?
No.
Did they encourage it? Or
no.
Did they encourage it?
No, they didn't discourage it, but they didn't encourage it. They
just
were
just something you did.
Just something I did.
And they
were supportive.
Many children in your house?
No, just one older brother who was in the Marines at the time, so
okay.
We didn't interact too much.
No. So he's off and about.
And I was off and about. And I came down to Florida to go to college at University of Miami. And just...
That's meant to have an amazing marine biology.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they were so amazing. It was so hard to get into. I went to junior college up in New York and tried to get into graduate school down here in marine biology and couldn't. You needed superb grades.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell people I went in through the back door. What I did was I went into a medical microbiology, and the standards weren't so high. They were high, but they weren't so high.
Sounds tough.
It does sound tough. It's not as tough as marine biology.
Yeah.
So I went into medical microbiology and worked in the medical field for many, many years. And part-time worked in diving. And then I said, boy, I'm going to get out of this rat race and the political problems of the medical industry. There's just as many in the dive business.
They're everywhere.
Politics is politics, yep, wherever you go. But I love diving, and I love teaching, and I love people.
Oh, that's unusual. Well, most people don't like people.
Oh, I love them. I love them. I don't like bad people, but I love people.
And yeah, they have a lot of interesting things going on with them, people.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Once you get into diving, though, you have one commonality. It's the love of the ocean.
Right, of course.
And adventure.
When you go diving, do you recognize the same shark that'll come along or the same dolphins that'll come over and say hi or no, any of that kind of movie stuff?
No, that's a lot of Hollywood. That's a lot of Hollywood.
That's a lot of Hollywood.
But the sharks and the dolphins and all, one of the questions, I know this would be your next question. Mm-hmm. Aren't you afraid of sharks? And, you know, I would ask people, why don't you go diving? Well, we're afraid of sharks. Aren't sharks dangerous? They can be. But we used to tell this little story about when you go down underwater, and one of the reasons I think that Florida stopped allowing us to feed sharks, mm-hmm, was they were afraid that the public would get carried away and maybe bring food down and sharks would, yeah, nip them. And I used to tell people, well, you don't walk through a lion's cage with a pork chop vest, so you don't carry fish underwater when you're around sharks. They can be dangerous, but they're not going after you. They're going after the food.
So these shark attacks that we hear about all the time along the beaches of Florida, mm-hmm, from Stewart, usually down, mm-hmm, that's mistaken identity on the shark?
Absolutely.
Part?
I would say majority of the time. Mm-hmm. There are some sharks out there that are dangerous. The great white is a dangerous shark. You want to stay away from that. But yeah, generally speaking, spear fishermen are very aware of carrying fish with them. Mm. They know that sharks can actually come up and try to get the fish, and they'll take a nip out of them. I was actually bit on the thumb by a nurse shark when I was feeding it once.
Oh, wow.
But no big deal.
Yeah.
They weren't going after me. They were going after
How do spear fishermen fish with the... Because, I mean, sharks can smell blood
they can.
Quite a far way away. When you kill the fish, you put it in your bag. Would you go up to the surface then, put it away?
You know what? The professional spear fishermen do it so many different ways. They can either send them up on a float.
Okay.
Some spear fishermen, I don't know how they do it. I don't know why they do it. They'll hook them,
yeah,
onto their belt, the fish that they catch. Mm-hmm. And they'll swim and catch another fish. And I just don't understand that because the sharks don't know what's going on.
No.
They're just eating machines. So they can send them up or they can go and take the fish and put it in the raft or in the bag up on the surface.
But there's still lurking blood around the area that they killed the fish,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, there can be.
So you're just taking a risk if that's what
you're
going to do.
You're taking a risk, basically. Mm-hmm. And what Florida's trying to do, and I don't know if it's passed or not, you'd have, mm-hmm, to find out in Tallahassee, they wanted to make it illegal to shoot fish around Florida, mm-hmm, in certain areas while using scuba. They claim, for a number of reasons, that the scuba divers, the spear fishermen, are wiping out the fish.
The scuba divers are wiping out the fish.
There you go.
Come on.
That's exactly my point. The spear fishermen are not happy about this at all. And they think they're protecting us from the shark attacks and the public. You know, people swimming and snorkeling in the water. Well, if there's a spear fisherman out there, maybe the shark will go after the swimmer.
Oh, I see.
And we just don't see that. The numbers just don't show that.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't get it.
But let's put a net out and catch hundreds of fish. That's fine.
There you
go. One or two here and there by a...
We don't agree with it. Mm-hmm. So we being the dive industry.
Right.
We're not hurting the environment. If anybody, we're the ones who see what's going on underwater. We know about the pollution, putting sand back on the beach. What do they call it? Renourishment of the beach.
What is that? I see them do that all the time. And that can't be a natural...
It's not.
...phenomenon that's going to end up well.
Well, for what?
For the environment.
It's not, because it actually chokes the reef. Nature will actually take that sand, silt, mm-hmm, and wash it back out in the ocean. Where is it going to go? It's going to land right on the reef. And the reef is very delicate. We have one of the largest barrier reefs around, right here off Florida. And
how are they allowed to do that? What is their thinking behind it? The buildings are afraid of the erosion, so they're adding sand to prevent the erosion.
They say that, but that's not going to do it. What they want is the tourists to be able to sit on the beaches. So they want to extend the beach so your people can sit on the beach and have a place to walk on the beach. And again, I don't know.
Yeah.
Having people sit on these beaches It's going to wash away no matter what anyway.
Yeah.
Let nature, I think they're building their condos and their whatever too close to the beaches anyway. There's an awful lot going on with the environment. So, you know, ocean
yes.
rising, sea rising, and water temperatures and all. It's a lot of stuff happening.
We certainly don't need us contributing to it.
By choking the diving off, I just don't get it. Down in the Keys, what they've done in Key Largo in particular, I think Hennecamp Underwater Park was one of the first in the nation to be restricted to divers and taking corals. Definitely, I can see that. You can't take live coral. Lobster, you can't take lobster in certain areas.
Mm.
Off here, you can, but they're trying to change that too. Spearfishing, you're not allowed to spearfish. So.
What do you think now about the fact that I was just recently talking to a friend where in stone crab claws, you used to be able to just take one claw. Now you can take both.
I haven't heard that.
I thought that was, like, unfortunate.
Is that true? I mean, I don't even know.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, it's true.
My thought was that, and I always understood that, if you took one, they could still protect themselves and
exactly.
feed themselves with the other.
But now you're allowed to take both.
I don't know about it.
And lobster season, when is that?
It ends March 31st.
Do you get a lot of business from lobster season?
Tremendous amount.
Mm.
Matter of fact, that's our Christmas. That's Christmas mm. season for the dive industry.
And it starts?
The end of July and runs through the end of March.
So it's quite long.
Quite long. I can see personally from the number of lobster and the size of the lobster in South Florida,
mm-hmm.
it's diminishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's because of the divers or the number of divers
mm-hmm.
or...
So you probably don't get a lot of business in the winter then, or it doesn't make any difference?
It's less. It's much less in the winter.
Yeah.
Than in the summer.
Well, this is a pretty warm winter though, right?
Yeah, but the seas still are rough.
Yeah.
And the ocean, from what I understand, I just talked to somebody this morning, they said the ocean is fairly cold right now.
Hmm.
For the locals, for the local divers.
Yeah.
We get cold.
Pretty
yeah.
wimps. Yeah.
yeah, we are wimpy.
Yeah.
You live down here long enough, you become a wimp. But you get people from Canada, from Germany,
they
from New
it.
York. Oh, yeah, Chicago, they love this. This is the bath water.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you turn blue in bath water, it's not bath water to me. No. No, it's too cool for me.
All right. It was a pleasure talking to you, Captain Pete.
Well, good luck with this. I hope it works out well for you.
Hi, I'm Dave Dempsey from Marine Intelligence. If you're the owner or captain of a superyacht, then you know how expensive internet can be. And yes, it's a ripoff. We've made it our mission to revolutionize the world of marine communications. We will find you the best price for your internet by comparing all major vendors. And we do that for free. That's right, no charge to the boat. It's a free service. We get you the best price for your yacht, whether it's just one boat or a fleet of boats, and all the savings will be passed on to you. We can save you over $1,000 per meg. So stop doing what you're doing and visit marineintelligence.net now, before you forget.
I'm standing on the ancient battlements of Castel de Belver, on a high hilltop, overlooking the magnificent city of Palma de Mallorca, vibrant capital of the Balearics, an island group in the Mediterranean Sea, which washes the shores of Morocco, Spain, France, Italy, Croatia, Greece, and many other great seafaring nations. Arrayed before me, along Palma's waterfront and onward to the town of Arenal, are tens of thousands of boats. There are juggernauts stacked with containers, cruise ships packed with tourists, ferries, freighters, mega yachts, motorboats, super yachts, sailboats, dinghies, dories, kayaks, sculls, and skiffs. Plus, of course, the ubiquitous yacht, the traditional double-ended fishing boat of these islands. Boats are this city's business: building, maintaining, repairing, refitting, and of course, selling them. And Palma has become, has perhaps always been, a world-renowned centre of excellence for sailing and for naval craftsmanship. So there's really no better place in the world to launch Boat Radio, a station for boat owners and sailors, water sports enthusiasts, armchair adventurers, and ocean lovers everywhere. Each week, there'll be programmes from the Arctic Circle, the Bahamas, Florida, Missouri, Australia, the United Kingdom, Italy, Croatia, Mallorca, and a dozen other places, as well as from the cockpits and wheelhouses of boats.
Hello, I'm Captain Bob May from Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. And you're listening to Boat Radio.
Each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames. From the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel, to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures.
Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, boat builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea.
We'll hear compelling tales and inspiring stories from often ordinary people who've done extraordinary things.
We did find an iceberg, but there is no such thing as smooth sailing when you're going north or when you're sailing as much as Ben and I do.
We'll be joined by many of the most prominent names from the fields of sailing, exploration and endurance sports.
Mark getting a nice puff of breeze on Taylor Canfield, leading Ian Williams. He's in the black boat, jiving now.
We'll delve into the glamorous world of the super yacht.
Summer comes around, we're ready to go, and all the boats start arriving back from the Caribbean, and we all get together third week of June.
But we'll also learn how to live off-grid aboard a more modest vessel.
I'm one of those lucky guys that didn't have to try and convince his wife to go on their sea dreams. I was thrilled with the idea of living on the boat.
We'll attend classic regattas at some of the most picturesque sailing locations on Earth.
I'm standing in the Fort Adams State Park in Rhode Island, looking back across the water to the city of Newport, sparkling in the early morning sunshine.
And we'll hear from scientists in some of the most forbidding environments.
Welcome to Ocean Research Project. My name is Matt Rutherford, and I am here in Sisimiut, Greenland.
There'll be recommended routes, anchorages and marinas. There'll be practical tips, medical advice, accurate weather forecasts, and, in addition, an indelible streak of marine conservation. And we'll hear from you, I hope, listening at home or at work, perhaps afloat somewhere. So, welcome to Boat Radio. We're glad you can join us in promoting and celebrating the wonderful world of boats.